I'm going to speak for a short while this afternoon from a series of verses that we find in the 17th chapter of Acts, beginning with verse 5 and going down through verse 9. Acts 17, verse 5 through verse 9. But the Jews, which believed not, moved with envy, took of them certain lewd fellows of the baser sort, and gathered a company, and set all of the city on an uproar, and assaulted the house of Jason, and sought to bring them out to the people. And when they had found them and drew not, they drew Jason and certain brethren unto the rulers of the city, crying, These that had turned the world upside down are come hither also, whom Jason hath received. And these all do contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, one Jesus. And they troubled the people and the rulers of the city when they heard these things. And when they had taken security of Jason and the others, they let them go. We're going to talk for a little bit tonight on my assigned subject, and that is tumult in Thessalonica and the assault on Jason. Following the release of Paul and Silas from the prison in Philippi, they departed and went into the land of Macedonia. They made their way through Amphipolis and Apollonia, and they eventually arrived in Thessalonica, and immediately Paul and Silas sought out a synagogue of the Jews. Thessalonica was a city that was on the shore of the sea. It was named in 315 B.C. It was named after the half-sister of Alexander the Great. It served as the capital of Macedonia, which was the northern part of Greece, after 146 B.C. And along with Corinth, Thessalonica made up the two great cities of Greece and probably the two most important commercial centers in Greece. It was right on the banks of the, it was right on the ocean, on the shore. It was a very important seashore city. It was a great commercial city. It was also a city of idolatry and a city of great sin. It was a very seriously, it was a very serious city, and there was very little godliness in the city of Thessalonica. As Paul and Silas made their way into Thessalonica, as was their custom, they found a synagogue of the Jews. Paul went into the synagogue, introduced himself, and immediately began to speak and began to evangelize, to teach the Jews about Jesus. And he was very successful. The Bible says in Acts 17:4 that he was very successful in persuading some of the Jews, along with a great multitude of devout Greeks or Gentiles, and not a few of the leading women, I suppose both Greek and Jew. But just as has happened before, when Paul began to speak Jesus about Jesus in these synagogues, the Jews became, the word that is used in this chapter tonight, they became envious. They didn't like what they were hearing. They did not like to be taught of Jesus. They didn't agree. They became envious, and they began to go after the Apostle Paul and Silas, and it resulted in an uproar or a tumult in the city of Thessalonica. My assignment tonight is to talk about Jason. The Jews were not persuaded by the Apostle Paul, except for this few, and they gathered a mob together. The Bible tells us that they went into the center of the city of Thessalonica, and they grouped people together, evil men from the marketplace. They brought these people of a lower base of people together. We would call them mercenaries today. These are people that will do anything for anybody. They have no cause on their own, but they will support any cause that is out there if they're paid enough. So these evil men, these Jews, these envious Jews, went into the city, into the center of the city, and they found these mercenaries, these evil men, and they hired them and brought them out to be a mob. You know, this is the same thing that's happened everywhere the Apostle Paul went. We can read about the problems that Paul had with the envious Jews in Antioch, in Iconium, and Lystra. And now he is in Thessalonica, and it's the same old problem. These Jews in the synagogue did not want to listen to Paul, so they tried to get rid of him. They will stone him. They will eventually kill him because they're trying to get rid of the word that he is teaching. And now they've gathered a mob together from the baser people in Thessalonica, evil men, and they are now going after the Apostle Paul and Silas. But they couldn't find him. They could not find Paul and Silas. So they went instead to the home of Jason. I don't know if Jason was a Jew or if Jason was a Greek, but I do know that Jason was a member of the church there in Thessalonica. He was a Christian, and it seems that they used the home of Jason to worship in. So it was the center of the newfound church in Thessalonica. And they found Jason, and they arrested Jason, and they dragged him to the politicians back in the heart of the city. Won't you listen to the charges that they made, these evil mercenary men made against Paul and Silas. It said they turned the world upside down, and now they have come here to do the same. They are acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, Jesus. Now these are the charges that were brought against Paul and Silas. They turned the world upside down in other places, and now they come here to turn Thessalonica upside down. And they are saying that Jesus is a king, which is contrary to our king. Now all of a sudden they're loyal Roman servants. All of a sudden they're talking about the king Caesar, these man-made kings. And the rulers, the politicians in Thessalonica, were disturbed by the charges that these men brought forward. Well, after an interrogation of Jason, it says that they let him and his brethren go, but it said they did take a security deposit. We would refer to that today as posting bond. They forced Jason to post bond to guarantee that the riots in the city would end, probably with the stipulation that Paul and Silas would leave the city of Thessalonica and these riots would end. Now let's keep in mind, it was not the Christians that started the riots. The Christians did nothing wrong. Paul and Silas did nothing but teach the Bible. It was these envious Jews and these men of baser sorts that caused the riots in the first place. And now Jason has to make a security deposit or post bond to guarantee that the riots will end. Well, Paul and Silas left Thessalonica quickly. They left at night. They went to Berea and eventually went on to Athens because these evil men followed them. But they left so that they would not bring more persecution upon the Christians in Thessalonica, and also so that they would not jeopardize the bond or the bail or the donation, the security deposit that Jason had made. So, Paul and Silas were gone. The mob scene ended. The riots ended. Jason made a security deposit promising that the riots would end. And now Paul and Silas have left to protect Jason and to protect the new Christians and the persecution that they would certainly have endured. Let's look at these mob charges. When they said that the world had been turned upside down by Paul and Silas, and now they're coming to Thessalonica to turn it up again, this was really quite a compliment to Paul and Silas and to the Christians. And it spoke of the effectiveness that Paul and Silas were having, not only in the rest of the world, but also here in Thessalonica. They had turned the world upside down, which is to say that they have radically impacted the world. And after Jesus was accepted and believed, the world certainly did change, and it would never be the same again. And of course, we realize that today, some 2,000 years in the future, what an upheaval of the world that it really was. And wouldn't it be nice if we could be thought of in San Angelo as the congregation that turned the city upside down and brought the power structures to believe and have faith in Jesus Christ? Well, that's what Paul and Silas did. They turned the world upside down because they taught to them a radical new thing, and this, of course, being Jesus, and he certainly did impact the world. And it was quite an understatement when they said that he had turned the world upside down. Let me give you an example of this upside down thinking to kind of help us understand more of what this means. There was a rich man that was spoke about in Luke 12, verses 16 through 21, that had enjoyed a tremendous harvest. He was already very, very wealthy, and now his harvest had come in great. This is a man that had great wealth, great riches, a great amount of power. And so in his mind, he began to determine, what am I going to do with all these riches? How can I handle all of this tremendous wealth that I have been given? And he said, what I will do, I'm just going to build a bunch of extra barns and bigger barns so I can store all of this grain. And then I can sell it as the market bears, and I can become even more rich and even more powerful. Well, Jesus turned the world upside down. Probably we today would have made this man a great civic leader, recognized him as a great capitalist, And possibly also they would have done the same thing in his era. But Jesus turned this upside down when Jesus said, you're a fool. You're a fool. And he said, you're putting your treasures upon earth and trusting in your own treasures and in your own work, and you're totally and completely ignoring your heavenly bank account. And Jesus said, I'm going to require your soul of you this night. Well, Paul was working through Paul and Silas, not to turn the world upside down, but to turn the world right side up. But of course, when sin takes over and the devil takes over, then the world, when you're upside down, it makes right side up look like upside down. So when they said the statement that it turned upside down, this was really a very great compliment. Another one of the accusations that they made against Paul and Silas was that they were acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, Jesus. And this was a very serious charge. And it raised the fears in the city. And the fears were that there might be opposition from the Roman government against Caesar and Rome. And so this was a very serious thing when they began to think and to realize that if these riots got to Rome, to the attention of the Caesar, and the Caesars understood that there was someone else that may have put themselves on a position of king as the Caesars felt they were, that this could be something that could be very, very, very hard for the city of Thessalonica. And you know, it's ironic. This is very ironic, these fears. Because if people will obey the gospel as Jesus taught it, and then the Christians, as Paul taught them in Thessalonica, an individual that will follow the teachings of Christ is actually going to be a better citizen than one that is not a Christian. Because the Bible teaches us to pray for our government officials. The Bible teaches us that if we're doing right, we need not fear government officials, because the government is there to punish those that do wrong. The teachings of Christ teach us to honor one another, to love one another, to honor the law, to obey the law, and also teaches us to live peaceably with all men. So this was a serious accusation that these evil men made, but in fact, this was a great compliment that they were making toward Paul and Silas and these new Christians in Thessalonica. The political revolution was not by the Christians, but the political revolution was in fact by the envious Jews and by the evil men that they had brought together. And of course, Jesus is a king, and he's a king on a spiritual level, a king on a level far higher than anything of the Caesars. So the teachings, that the accusations that they brought were in fact ironic, because Christians would make a better citizen, but also they were very true, because Paul and Silas were teaching about Jesus, a king, but a king on a spiritual level and not on an earthly level. Roman officials really didn't care what these people worshipped or how they worshipped or if they worshipped. Roman officials were really only concerned when public order was disrupted or disturbed by these riots. Now, if there's riots in the country, if there's riots in the city, if the peace has been disturbed in the city, then of course the Roman legionaries would come in and they handled these riots with an iron hand. And nobody wanted that, even the Apostle Paul and Silas. So Jason paid the bond. He posted the bond, even though he didn't start the riot. And Paul and Silas left Thessalonica. Now you would think that after only 3 weeks of teaching in the synagogues, that this little church, that the seeds would be uprooted, that the Christians would be uprooted, that they didn't have the strength, they didn't have the power, they didn't have the teachings to continue. And you would think that this would have destroyed the church in Thessalonica. But if you thought that, you would think wrong. Because this little church, a year later, received the first letter that Paul wrote to the churches, and he wrote 2 letters to the Thessalonians, and he understood and realized that this church, even after only 3 weeks, had become an example of Christianity, an example of the churches throughout Asia. And they were a very healthy group. They were a very believing group. This 3 weeks that Paul sent with them were, in fact, many quality weeks. And the church in Thessalonica was a very strong church. So, as we begin to pull all of this together now and realize what this was and what happened in Thessalonica, And the lessons that we can learn from this, we realize that there's quite a few lessons that we can learn from these few short passages in Acts 17. Paul spent 3 weeks in Thessalonica, but he gave a very quality teaching when he was there. And the congregation that was established in that city was a congregation that was very strong, very well rooted. And it was one that when Paul finally wrote them in the first letter, that he encouraged them to continue in their faith. And he even said in Acts 20 and 17 that what happened to Thessalonica is a good example of what happens when the whole counsel of God is delivered and people believe it. And Paul taught the people with the truth and the simplicity of the word. He taught them with the word of God, and they realized that the word that Paul taught them was in fact truth. They realized the simplicity and the truth. They realized that it was not the hyperbole that they were getting from the Jewish teachers. But Paul taught them in plainness. Paul taught them in delivery. Paul taught them with the scriptures that they understood from the Old Testament. And Paul taught them in such a way that they believed upon it. They were convinced of it. They were converted to it. And they accepted the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the power of the gospel was very strong in Thessalonica. He taught the Christians how to live. He taught them to love one another. And the statement has been made before that Jews and Gentiles were like oil and water. They didn't get along well together. But this group of Christians did. These group of Christians, both the Jews and the Gentiles, did get along together. They learned to be a congregation together. They learned to care for each other. And they had only one common denominator. And of course, that common denominator was Jesus Christ. He taught them how to work with God. He taught them how to work with one another for the benefit of the gospel. He taught them that Christ, in fact, was a king, but a king superior to the Caesars, on a far higher level, a spiritual king. And he taught them about the second coming of Christ. These people thought that Christ coming back, the second coming, was going to happen at any minute. Paul taught them how to live, to be ready for this event, even if it was soon or if it was late. He gave them a hope for the future. And he encouraged them to continue in their Christian living. It was a strong, strong church that was planted even after only 3 weeks of training by the Apostle Paul in Thessalonica. And it converted these people from the sinful ways of the idolatrous worship that they lived. And he taught them that salvation was something that they could have if they lived according to the words of Jesus. And he praised the congregation for their strength, for the stand that they had made, and for the people that they were to be. This is a true pattern of Christianity and a true pattern of conversion that we can still use today, which is why we have the Thessalonian letters, to teach us what Paul was able to do in a very short time. He taught them simply. He reasoned with them from the words of God. He taught them the truth. He didn't try to impress with his words, but he taught them from the truth of the Bible. He taught them about Christ as the true king. And he was able to say in 1 Thessalonians 1 and 8, "For from you the word of the Lord is sounded forth not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place. Your faith toward God has gone out so that we do not need to say anything." These people were not afraid to accept, to be convicted, and to be convinced of the gospel. And after they learned it, they were willing to share it. And the church was strong in Thessalonica because of the teachings that Paul, even in 3 short weeks, had been able to do in this sinful, idolatrous city. And that's all I got.